This show proudly sponsored by Real American Freestyle Wrestling.
This episode is brought to you by LifeLock. Between two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN, you try to be in control of how your info is protected. But many other places also have it, and they might not be as careful. That's why LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats. If your identity is stolen, they'll fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/podcast for 40% off. Terms apply. This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible. Financial geniuses. Monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary, not available in all states or situations.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. We have a lot going on this hour. Bobby Burak's going to be on, a media analyst with OutKick. You know that. And we're going to talk about some of the exchanges that we saw with Kash Patel brawling it out, as well as the sudden, I guess, suspension, eventual firing of Jimmy Kimmel, the second big late night host to go down. We're going to play some of those clips and get your opinion about what should happen. And Jason Chaffetz. You've watched Jason all over the news more than ever because, unfortunately, good for us to have an eyewitness, but bad for you to have to witness it. He was in the audience when Charlie Kirk was assassinated by the gunman. And from the times of 33 hours to find who was responsible, to what he saw, what he experienced, to what we're experiencing now. Jason Chaffetz with you in a matter of moments. We're also watching the latest developments with the President of the United States over in UK, having what seems to be a fantastic trip, now meeting with business leaders and the UK Prime Minister. They're talking dollars, cents, and steel. Before we get to Jason, let's get to the big three.
Number three.
It's a singular privilege to be the first American president welcomed here. But this is truly one of the highest honors of my life. Such respect for you and such respect for your country.
President of the United States just did great. And so what? You know what? So did the British royal family. The president in the UK, the respect reveals how far he has come and the world has come in understanding who President Trump is and what he can do. And Trumpism is now a movement, and the UK is experiencing it, and I think it's a win-win.
Number two.
I'm going to borrow your terminology and call bullshit on your entire career in Congress.
I'm reclaiming my time,
it has been a
Director.
Disgrace to the American
Director,
people.
I'm reclaiming my time.
You can reclaim your time all you want.
Mr. Chairman, you're going to allow a witness to speak this way?
Cash Clash Part 2. Wild scene on Capitol Hill as the partisan Dems in the House try to land brutal blows on Kash Patel. Instead of trying to make some gains and make some progress, the problem? Cash came to play.
Number one.
I'm stunned and shocked by their failure to understand just how painful this is for people in this country who knew Charlie Kirk, and they're continuing to operate on one principle. If Donald Trump feels something, they hate it.
That is Mark Halperin, who so often makes so much sense. Aftermath of the Charlie Kirk killing still causing massive clashes, firings, and worry about the country. I have an idea. Why not lower the temperature on all sides? Calm down and get back to work as we get set to have the memorial service. It's going to be a must-watch on Sunday afternoon, where they're going to look to sell out a stadium usually set for Super Bowls and the Cardinals over in Arizona. Well, Jason Chaffetz, as a Fox News contributor, Utah congressman, you thought you were going to be seeing a lot. But when you go to see Charlie Kirk speak at your local campus, what were you thinking that day? What were you expecting, and what did you experience?
Well, I was in Congress. That was part of my congressional district. It's 25 minutes from my home. It's where our daughter had graduated recently, and she wanted to go see Charlie Kirk. And I had traded text messages with Charlie because I went out with ICE, and I invited him to come with me. And then he invited me to, and I said, hey, our daughter would really like to meet you. And he said, you know, come on by. Absolutely. We'll make that happen. And then one of the most horrific things in my life happened. And I still hear it. I can still hear it in my head. And I saw it. And You got to remember, there's 3,000 people that witnessed this as well, and it's hard to deal with.
How did your kids deal with it? How did your family deal with it?
I mean, the panic and the shock. And
you weren't with them, right? You had separated?
Our daughter and son-in-law were sitting in the sun, and me, I didn't want to sit in the sun, so I moved to a place where the dude's in the shade because it was brilliant, beautiful, sunny day. And so I wasn't sitting right next to him, and my wife was coming in from another angle, and, you know, then all hell broke loose. And but you just love them, spend time with them, but they're still mourning, and I think they're still in shock, and they've got to learn how to deal with it. It happened.
Can you tell me the mood that day? Are most people there supporters?
Yeah.
Sometimes people show up because they don't agree with them.
Well, it was interesting. A group of LGBTQ supporters had gathered right above Charlie. Law enforcement actually moved him off to the side. When Charlie came out, to the sound of chanting of USA, USA, and interspersed with Charlie Kirk, Charlie Kirk, most, I would venture to say, are supporters. This is a very conservative part of the world. 95% of the people are probably under the age of 30. And Charlie kind of looked around and said, hey, come on down and join the discussion. And, you know, Charlie is famous for taking on dissenters and answering any question that he possibly can. And again, at the time, in real time, once I, you know, got on camera less than 30 minutes after the attack, you know, I guessed, but I think I was right, I guessed that it was no coincidence that the question being asked about trans shooters in mass was when the shot was fired. And I still don't think the investigation's over. I don't think this is a lone wolf who went awry.
You don't.
Look, I am very tied into local law enforcement. There's nobody in local law enforcement that believes that this is just a lone shooter who had some crazy idea that formulated in a week. There's nobody that's acting under that premise.
Well, it doesn't look like any. Have you seen something that would not make sense? For example, we watched him with the gun in his leg, right? But how did he get on the roof? Did he scout it before? Did he just get there one day and go, that roof looks high enough? I see the tent. I'll go up there. But to me, did he know the campus that well to know there was an outside staircase to get you to?
He wasn't a student there. This is not a student.
It's hours away from his house.
It's hours away from his house. It's like it's a big open campus. Like I said, 40,000 students. And how did people react once the shot was fired? Now, I don't know the authenticity, and neither does law enforcement, but they're searching for it. You know, it's interesting talking to
authenticity for what?
Of the videos. So law enforcement's struggling with a new phenomenon. That is, they get thousands of tips and thousands of videos come in. But if there's any artificial intelligence enhancement, the public thinks they're doing a favor, right? I enhance this video. Now I send it to law enforcement. Law enforcement can't use that. It'll be inadmissible in evidence. So they got to sort those out. But one of the allegations is, you know, they have a guy who jumped up and cheered.
71-year-old guy, Zinn.
Well, that's a different.
That's a different guy.
That's a whole story unto itself. But there's another guy who appears to be younger, who appears to turn around and jump up and look back. I don't know the authenticity of that. That could be totally bogus. But I can tell you, having had a one-on-one personal conversation, law enforcement wants to have that conversation.
They can't find the guy, kid, or whatever?
I can't represent because that was 48 hours ago I had that conversation, but there's those types of, I'm telling you, there are multiple people this. Look, Kash Patel said they're looking at more than 20. I've heard the law enforcement people say there's near 40. And remember, nobody's dual running the story, but 48 hours after this, a Fox vehicle, Fox 13, a local affiliate, was bombed with attempted bombing in Salt Lake City. They arrested two people on terrorism charges. Is that related or not related? Law enforcement, again, does at the federal and a state level, they do not know. But their feeling is that the threat level is still high. Anybody who goes out the camera and says, oh, yeah, you know, this is all one and done, and hey, we got him and we're done. There are groups out there like the Armed Queers of Salt Lake City and some other militant groups. They're still looking into all of that.
I guess they are. And I know on Discord, they say there's a lot but Discord's cooperating. And then you wonder too about the partner of this guy. So, he questioned, but he knew that letter was there. He knew about the exchange. He didn't call the police. The police come into that house.
Yeah.
And then he tells the police and they work with him. So he didn't turn himself in. That's not necessarily against the law.
Well, look, Washington County Sheriff Nate Brodsky, I've talked to him for a couple hours. He and I have, I know him exceptionally well because he knew, had a 25-year relationship with a retired law enforcement officer who happened to be neighbors of the family. That's what ultimately brought the alleged killer into.
Yeah, here is Nate Brodsky. He is the Washington County Sheriff, and he talked about how he got involved in this.
After about 40 seconds, Sheriff Smith's like, wait. What are you talking about? So he was shocked, as I was, to hear the news. And so I repeated myself. He said, you know, how credible is it? I said, you know, I trust this guy that called me with my life. And I think it's time you need to get your people, the lead investigators, headed to Washington County.
And there he was saying he got the call from the man you were talking about. Cut three.
Tyler knew it was just inevitable with all the law enforcement pressure that he, you know, his picture in the news, the gun on the news. He knew it was inevitable that he would be caught. He was fearful of a SWAT team hit on his house, or he was fearful of being shot by law enforcement. So part of the negotiation and getting him to bring himself in was that we would treat it as delicate and as soft as possible to make him feel comfortable to where he would show up at my office.
It's unbelievable that he's worried about being shot.
Yeah. Now, that was about 10 p.m. the day after the shooting. So dad recognizes the son, starts asking questions allegedly about grandpa's gun, because it's a very distinctive gun, and evidently there were photos of that. The shoes were recognizable. The parents do. I can't imagine it more difficult. Hey, son, we need to talk about this, and the gig's over, and, you know, you got to do the right thing. And having a neighbor who's a friendly, who has 25 years of law enforcement experience, and then bringing him in. I think Sheriff Brodsky, the Washington County Sheriff did exactly the right thing and got him into custody, and we got him alive, which is a huge help.
He was more concerned over the text messages, you know, a couple of days later now. My old man's going to kill me if I don't get my grandfather's gun back.
Right.
So not realizing you're up for murder, spend the rest of you about to destroy your family, your legacy, their family's legacy, their lives, your life. You're going to probably lose your life in the death penalty. But if I don't get that gun, the grandpa's gun back, my old man's going to be really angry at me.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's
the
evidence.
Think about the mindset, though.
Yeah, it's impossible.
He doesn't understand the consequences. In that mind, does he understand that the rest of his life is going to be so brutal beyond comprehension?
There's an obvious huge disconnect. I wrote an op-ed, it's on foxnews.com. It talks a lot about nihilism. And nihilism is a new word for me. I had to learn about it. But there's a set of people as a precursor to radicalization who don't believe in God. They don't believe in anything. They don't believe in consequences. They lose grip on reality. And I think that's infecting a lot of people across the country. And then it gets exacerbated by the online gaming, et cetera.
When we come back, more with Jason Chaffetz, including Barack Obama responding to the shooting, the death, and who he blames. Don't move.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because, man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
I'm Guy Benson, in for Dana Perino. This week on Perino on Politics, I'm joined by Fox News contributor, OutKick columnist, and host of the Getting Hammered podcast, Mary Catherine Hamm, my dear friend.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
When I hear, not just our current president, but his aides, who have a history of calling political opponents vermin, enemies, who need to be targeted, that speaks to a broader problem that we have right now.
Unbelievable that a former president would not use that opportunity to talk about the extreme things that happened on his side while he was president and when his vice president became president. You talked about targeted. You think the president is responsible tangentially for what's going on? Yeah, he's got a direct way of delivering, but we were never more divided than under him. Jason Chaffetz, what's your reaction to that choice of words?
I could not be more disappointed in President Barack Obama. His entire tenure, he tries to, A, pretend that he had this scandal-free administration and there was nothing that went awry and it was just a perfectly executed 8 years. But his comments, his well, you know, it happens on both sides. No, it doesn't. It does not happen on both sides. And there is a far different than, hey, we got a fight on our hands, you know, politically, and somebody actually firing shots. I didn't hear him talking about that school shooting at the people that, you know, young kids killed in a Catholic school. I didn't hear him talking about these types of things. This person was assassinated. Can't you just come out strong and condemn it? Where are all these Democrats? Don't tell me, oh, well, Donald Trump. If you even mentioned the word Donald Trump in that, he was nowhere close to this. He had nothing to do with this. Charlie Kirk was as American as could possibly be, doing what we're supposed to be doing, is inviting dialogue and discussion. You disagree with me? Come, let's talk about it.
Remember,
that should be celebrated.
It started with deplorables. You know, yeah. You had people saying who, if you had the basket of deplorables with Hillary Clinton, and then basically Joe Biden saying disparaging thing about all Trump supporters once he had already decided that he wasn't going to run, called them garbage. That's why President Trump hopped on with the garbage deflector. So how do you expect people to feel about that? I mean, don't act. What you should do is what Gerald Ford, Jimmy Carter, George H.W. Bush and Clinton were together. They were not, even when their kids were running, when his wife was running, he was like a politician. But when 41's son was running, he stayed out of it. Gerald Ford and Jimmy Carter did appearances together. What's this guy's problem? He can't let it go. He still lives in Washington, still working on gerrymandering. It's like going back to high school. Enough already.
Yeah, and he has his so-called wingman, Eric Holder, out there beating the drums on it. If you want to say something positive and help bring the country together, then do that. But as we talked about earlier in this show, because Donald Trump says something nice or believes in something, they will take exactly the opposite position.
Let me ask him, where's the protests against the left wing? I don't see any protests. You know what I see? Vigils.
Yeah.
I see vigils, and I see idiots at Texas State University break up a vigil, making mocking noises. Yeah. You saw what happened at Texas A&M. Texas twice. Wow. And you see this happening, people doing disturbing things, but you don't see Charlie Kirk supporters trying to beat anybody up. You don't see Republicans trying to grab a Democrat and try to fight them, right? You don't see protests in front of leaders' houses. Crockett or somebody as irresponsible as that. Just not the way they roll.
No, and it's embarrassing and sad that it happened in my backyard. It happened in Utah. Utah's better than that. I guess in just the slightest of ways, if there's, you know, this is not a student. This is a guy who went really off the rails. And again, I think we have to look at it. It's because I think it's beyond just radicalism. He actually, what is it that a young 20-year-old takes a gun, goes up, and fires and kills somebody? That is not a rational thought. That is not.
And you just don't think it's a lone gunman. Your gut tells you, and more than that.
And every single law enforcement officer behind the scenes that I'm really wired in with there in Utah, you can't be in Congress for, you know, nearly 10 years and not have these relationships. None of them believe that.
Do you believe there might be some video days before of people walking that property, looking up, scoping it out?
Absolutely. I think, look, if you're not a student and then suddenly you figure out how to get up on the roof, get to that perfect position, get in the prone position. And again, I want to see all the video of who reacts how, because I can tell you, being there and watching Charlie when he got shot, everybody hit the ground. Everybody hit the ground. There was yelling, screaming, and then a real pause of like, are there going to be more shots? And then the people started running, but not everybody did. There were a couple that were doing something different. We need to know who those people are.
And that video exists, right?
Oh, I think so.
And we have the FBI's way of getting people we don't even know about. Jason, thanks so much. Glad you're okay.
Thank you.
I look forward to the next chapter to find out more about the killer and who else is involved. Brian Kilmeade Show. Bobby Burak next.
I'm Emily Campagno. This week on the Fox True Crime Podcast, I'm joined by attorney and spokesperson for the Friends of Amanda Knox Organization, Ann Bremner, who's featured in the new Fox Nation special, Framed.
Listen and follow now at foxtruecrime.com. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
We had some new lows over the weekend with the MAGA gang desperately trying to characterize this kid who murdered Charlie Kirk as anything other than one of them and doing everything they can to score political points from.
I mean, that is Jimmy Kimmel, and it was that monologue that got him a major... put it this way, not every affiliate is owned by ABC. There's other affiliate that owns, I think, 30 affiliates, ABC affiliates, called Nexstar, own stations. They listened to that Jimmy Kimmel monologue, and they said, we're not airing him. We're not. We're putting in repeats. We're not airing him. Why? There's a lot more involved in it. I'll play a little bit more of it, but that was the beginning of it. Then ABC decided, they have decided not to air the show indefinitely. So I assume he's done. President Trump could not be happier about it. How do I know? He put it on Truth Social. Bobby Burak joins us now. He covers politics, culture, media, and sports for OutKick. Bobby, this came as a big surprise to me. What about to you?
Yeah, it did, Brian. So Kimmel made those remarks on Monday, and they were willfully inaccurate. There is no evidence that the MAGA gang is responsible for Charlie Kirk's assassination. The Utah governor said that the suspected assassin had leftist ideology. The text message indicate that the killer targeted Kirk over his beliefs. So here you have Kimmel going on air in front of millions of people, blaming it on conservatives and Trump supporters. And I think here's the big takeaway. Kimmel was on air live Tuesday. He did not address those comments. He did not correct it. And by all indications, he had no interest in setting the record straight. And I think that played a big role in his suspension.
So you're saying that this came from Monday? I didn't realize it came from Monday. Okay. Here's more from that. And I think the bigger picture tells a more just like a heartless misunderstanding. Maybe he just really doesn't know. Charlie Kirk, no joke, was like a son to the president. They saw each other almost, you know, once a week, but sometimes every single day for 6 years, 6.5 years. Then he became a confidant to Don Jr., especially. The first person he met was Eric. So he felt totally comfortable at the Trump Tower or the Oval Office. So Jimmy Kimmel, here's the extended part of this. Cut 17.
We hit some new lows over the weekend with the MAGA gang desperately trying to characterize this kid who murdered Charlie Kirk as anything other than one of them and doing everything they can to score political points from it. In between the finger pointing, there was grieving. On Friday, the White House flew the flags at half staff, which got some criticism. But on a human level, you can see how hard the president is taking this.
My condolences on the loss of your friend Charlie Kirk. May I ask, sir, personally, how are you holding up over the last day and a half, sir?
I think very good. And by the way, right there, you see all the trucks. They just started construction of the new ballroom for the White House, which is something they've been trying to get, as you know, for about 150 years. And it's going to be a beauty.
Yes. He's at the fourth stage of grief, construction. Demolition. Construction. This is not how an adult grieves the murder of someone he called a friend. This is how a four-year-old mourns a goldfish, okay?
I mean, to me, that tells the story. Does he, number one, it's like walking into a funeral and saying, I don't think the family's upset enough. You know, it's not up to you to judge. And does he not realize that they're no longer laughing at his stuff? They're clapping. So that's like a politician. It's not even comedy. Not only that, it's insensitive. It's tone deaf, not funny.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the subplot of all this, is that ABC didn't just take Kimmel off air because his comments were insensitive and factually incorrect. Brian, I believe he was already on the outs because nobody was watching his show. So we know from CBS that Stephen Colbert lost about $40 million a year. Well, he had 30% higher ratings than Kimmel, and Kimmel makes the same $17 million a year as Colbert. So you do that math, Kimmel's show was probably costing ABC a lot of money. And like you said, he's not funny anymore. He comes across as a partisan hack, desperate to try to get the approval of the Hollywood elites. You watch that clip, even if you don't like the president, it wasn't funny. It was corny and cringe and overly partisan. And I think Kimmel has dug his grave long before this latest stint.
Yeah, I mean, put it this way. He takes the whole summer off. Carson used to take a lot of days off too, but took the whole summer off. I know from a couple of people that went during the pandemic, Colbert, Jimmy Fallon, and Jimmy Kimmel did a podcast. I heard from a bunch of people. It was hysterical. They were just fun. They are funny guys. Jon Stewart, especially. Look, they are funny. I always thought he was funny when he was on Fox NFL Sunday. Jimmy Kimmel used to do those great videos on Fox NFL Sunday. He's also used to this format. He used to be the sports guy with Adam Carolla in the morning show. I forgot the name, Kevin and Bean over in California. I just missed that part of his career. So I've seen the career. So he's funny, but they lose the sense of humor because Trump actually bent their brains. I mean, for him not to think that this is like a family member and you're mocking him, and that's when the affiliates bowed out. I don't think it was pressure from Brendan Carr of the FCC.
No, I don't either. I see people saying that this is an attack on free speech. First of all, there's a difference between cancel culture and accountability. When you are mocking the people grieving and also spreading blatant lies like Kimmel did about the suspected assassin, you're out of face some level of accountability. But you're right, Brian. I think the reason ABC pulled him so quickly is because Nexstar, which controls 32 ABC affiliates, they preempted him. So not only was this show losing money before, it was set to lose a whole lot more of money after Nexstar made that decision yesterday, not the FCC or Carr's comments. I think this has much more to do with the financial aspect of Kimmel's career and what Nexstar did.
Bobby Barak with us now. You can see him streaming. We are streaming too, and Bobby's got his Zoom up. Here's more from Kimmel, just flat out mocking Trump days after a key member of his team, like a family member, died.
And it didn't just happen once.
When I heard it, I was in the midst of, you know, building a great... For 150 years, they've wanted a ballroom at the White House, right? They don't have a ballroom. They have to use tents on the lawn for President Xi when he comes over. If it rains, it's a wipeout. And so I was with the architects that were designed. It's going to be incredible. And they came in. They said, Charlie Kirk is dead. I didn't know what they meant. I said, he was dead. Charlie Kirk was shot. And they thought he was dead because it was so horrific, you know. Mm-hmm. And I said, dead.
And then we installed the most beautiful chandelier. You sconces you wouldn't believe. There's something wrong with them. There really is. I mean.
That was with us. And this is the first time I'm hearing this. You realize he went on to stun, and what do you think? And I couldn't believe it. And I told everyone, go home. So if he let it play, we're done with this. He left and went to the Oval Office, where we found out later, J.D. Vance explained it to him, and he was just flat out devastated. In fact, so they actually, not only did they take him out of context, but they cut him off. And during that time, you hear his audience kind of laughing. So to be that tone deaf and that full of hate, I mean, J.D. Vance said that he was one of the people that told him, first he's been shot, and then he's dead. And J.D. Vance had a lot to say yesterday, I thought, with Jesse. And here's a little about what J.D. Vance actually said with the president's reaction. Cut 11.
We got the news from Mike that Charlie had passed probably about an hour before the rest of the world found out. And I was the person who walked into the Oval Office and said, Mr. President, I'm sorry, but Charlie passed. And that was a very, very tough moment. You know, Susie Wiles, the White House chief of staff, was in tears. And she doesn't show emotion. You know, she is even keel the whole way. And she was in tears. And I just gave Susie a hug. And I think all of us kind of lost it. And it felt like, you know, it felt like we were all mourning our friend before any of the politics or the thought about, you know, what a titan he was and how influential he was to the movement. How do we possibly replace him? We were all just sad because our friend had died, and we supported each other in that moment, as you do with your friends. But man, it was a bad, bad day.
Look, if you even flip the channel off CNN or MSNBC for a second, you would have heard that this was different than anything else. And then if you just listen to Bill Maher on Friday on his show on HBO, you understand that's a liberal guy that would vote for Jimmy Kimmel over President Trump any day of the week. You understand that this was different. So I know he put up something saying, I feel bad for the family and everything, but it just shows you what a bubble they're in. Bobby, I think that if you go up to a lot of people that of his audience and you said that laptop you know is real, they would go, no, that Hunter laptop isn't real. If you know the Hunter, the Russia hoax was a hoax. He was not collaborating with Vladimir Putin to win an election. They go, no, I think he was. Because they have no idea the reality or somebody else's perspective. I do. I'll tell you exactly what people, Democrats, are thinking. Because I'm always flipping around, asking.
Yeah, and that bubble you speak of, what is so grotesque about it is the dehumanization of anybody outside of that bubble. And that has been so clear since Kirk's passing, whether it's MSNBC, CNN, Jimmy Kimmel, you go down the list, the New York Times, they don't speak of Charlie Kirk as a human. They just speak of him as this political activist that they despise. That's how they cover Donald Trump. That's how people speak of you and I or anybody associated with Fox News. And that is, I think, the overarching problem here is that when you don't look at people with different views as you, as human or worthy, it's a really dangerous concept, Brian. And you look at some of the people who have lost their job over this. They didn't lose their job because they voiced a political opinion. Some of them blame Charlie Kirk for his assassination. You have professors celebrating, uploading videos on TikTok saying he deserved it. And some people who still have their jobs, like that buffoon Matt Gutman, saying that he was touched by the alleged assassin admitting the murder to his trans partner. I mean, these are not how normal people react to a murder, especially one seen on video.
So, Bobby, I want to bring you to something different. Kamala Harris has her biography that's rolling out called 107 Days, because that's how long she ran for president. And The Atlantic got an excerpt from it, at which time Harris just says that Tim Walz was not her first choice of running mate. She describes Pete Buttigieg was her first choice, later deemed him the openly gay former transportation secretary to be too big of a risk on the ticket. Quote, he would have been an ideal partner if I were a straight white man. But we were already asking a lot of America to accept a black woman married to a Jewish man. Part of me wanted to say, screw it, just do it. But knowing what was at stake, it was too big of a risk. So she really thinks so little of America.
Yeah, that is such nonsense, this whole idea that only white men can win. I mean, Barack Obama won twice, Brian. This is actually going to really shoot Democrats in the feet come 2028, because I think they do believe that any woman or someone who's not a straight white guy can't run. I think they're going to push Gavin Newsom across that finish line because they think he's the only one Americans will vote for. And I think the more Newsom is in the spotlight, the more Americans are going to look at him and say, President, no thanks.
I agree. But he had an opportunity now to say that when I started this podcast, the first person I called was Charlie Kirk.
That's right.
He flew on his own dime to come. And he sat with me for 2 hours. And I liked him. And he kept in touch with me and he kept in touch with staff. But you know, the second half was reported, not him. He's so concerned about looking like he cared about Charlie Kirk that he doesn't want to say anything. To me, anybody who's a human being who could state the facts and make himself look like a statesman would take that opportunity. But he sees everything like a partisan. Bobby, thanks so much for your time. I look forward to listening to you reading you on OutKick.
Brian, let's catch up soon.
You got it. 1-866-408-7669. We'll talk about more of that, including what Joe Biden's having trouble doing in just a moment.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, I'm Trey Gowdy, host of the Trey Gowdy Podcast. I hope you will join me every Tuesday and Thursday as we navigate life together and hopefully find ourselves a little bit better on the other side.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
But before the president even arrived in the UK, a rare encounter in the skies, a Spirit Airlines jet coming too close to comfort to Air Force One, rebuked by air traffic control.
Pay attention, Spirit 1300, turn 20 degrees right. I'll keep an eye out for him, he's white and blue. Pay attention, get off the iPad.
Get off the iPad? It's Spirit Airlines. How's the pilot going to Google how to fly a plane?
Wow, I didn't see that. Who was that from?
That was from The Daily Show.
Yeah, that is crazy, though. And so what that is that's real. The Air Force One was flying over Long Island. Spirit Air was flying to Boston. They got way too close. They tried four times to get the pilot's attention. On the fourth time, he said, look at us. Get your head off the iPad. Then someone told me, Brian, you kind of look at iPads when you're flying. Not really. In other words, I've been in the cockpit of a plane, so it is true that you don't live off the windshield. But when you're flying on a clear day, there's no reason, why you're not hearing the interruption, number one. And number two, you're not looking around. Obviously, that gets you worried. But Air Force One, what do you do? What if that Spirit Airline was hijacked and that Spirit Airline was heading towards Air Force One? I mean, there are F-16s around Air Force One, especially going to the UK. What do you do, right?
Well, they said even though, it was still miles and miles and miles away. It wasn't like this really close call. It was just closer than they should have been to Air Force One. But also on that note, the Tonight Show also did a funny little thing about Spirit Airlines apologizing.
Well, in response to the incident, Spirit released an apology. Take a look.
Spirit Airlines would like to apologize for its close call with Air Force One. After a thorough investigation, we attribute the incident to not having a steering wheel, using a radio that's actually just a flip phone from Boost Mobile, assuming we were playing plane chicken, the autopilot being Clippy from Microsoft Word, a Frontier Airlines flight dared us to do it, mistaking the radar screen for a game of Pong, and one passenger forgot to turn on airplane mode and it broke the entire plane. Spirit Airlines, making flying exciting again.
So that's pretty funny. Yeah, that's great. So, President of the United States is going to have a press conference shortly. We'll bring you the highlights. They usually go on for a long time and makes other leaders' area definitely uncomfortable. Prime Minister Starmer will be there. They mentioned maybe $200 million, billion dollars worth of deals. They want to make, they're building a lot of nuclear, modular nuclear plants for power in the UK. They have this pharmaceutical company that's going to be investing in the U.S. So pledgings of tens of billions of dollars, and they're trying to make AI, this to be a real AI hub. NVIDIA is also building a major facility there. So that's going to help with British jobs. And I got to give the British great praise. It's cost them $200 million to do this, to put on the pomp and circumstances to honor the president and have the second state visit ever. President who was mocked in 2017. He's not a real president. He didn't really win. He didn't get the popular vote. The Russians gave him the victory. He's going to be impeached. What about all the investigations, the Mueller report? And they came over and he got booed and people were making protests on the streets and they're flying balloons. Now he comes over here with the type of display that even the British are in awe of in terms of the lengths they went. And the goal is to create a trade relationship. Why is it necessary? Because after Brexit, they wanted to have free on foreign policy and domestic policy and financial policy, but they also love the interaction with the EU. They're no longer there right now. What's going to supplement that? A great relationship with the USA. It didn't happen with Obama. It didn't happen with Biden. He never liked England. The president always did. So the prime minister is in political trouble, and we'll see some of the highlights, the Q&A in just a moment. Don't move.
Wouldn't it be great to manage your portfolio on one platform? Well, now you can trade all in one place on Robinhood. That means you can trade individual stocks and ETFs and also buy and sell crypto using seriously powerful and intuitive tools at one of the lowest costs on average without needing to manage multiple apps. Robinhood makes withdrawing and depositing crypto seamless. Send crypto to your Robinhood account or send crypto from your Robinhood account to other wallets without deposit or withdrawal fees from Robinhood. Trade all in one place. Get started now on Robinhood. Trading crypto involves significant risk. Crypto trading is offered through an account with Robinhood Crypto LLC. Robinhood Crypto is licensed to engage in virtual currency business activity by the New York State Department of Financial Services. Crypto held through Robinhood Crypto is not FDIC insured or SIPC protected. Network fees may apply to crypto transfers. Crypto transfers may not be available to all customers. Investing involves risk, including loss of principal. Securities trading is offered through an account with Robinhood Financial LLC. Member SIPC, a registered broker dealer.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there. We got a big hour coming your way. We're tracking all the events happening overseas. The President of the United States is done with the ceremonial part of his trip in the UK. Now it's time to literally brass tacks and business. And he's got the leading business leaders of the world traveling with him again. And they're all on board, it seems, from Blackstone to Microsoft. They are all there looking to do some deals with Britain. Remember, the UK really needs these deals now that they're part of the, I know we're used to it, they're not, of the EU. Economically, they liked the relationship. It was not making their economic decisions in foreign policy. That's what bothered them. This hour, we're going to be joined by the Republican Study Committee Chair, August Pfluger. Dr. Nicole Sapphire is standing by, but let's get to the big three.
Number three.
It's a singular privilege to be the first American president welcomed here. But this is truly one of the highest honors of my life. Such respect for you and such respect for your country.
Well, President, to the UK, the respect shown reveals how far the world has come into understanding who Trump is. And now they're dealing with Trumpism. I'll explain.
Number two.
I'm going to borrow your terminology and call bullshit on your entire career in Congress.
I'm reclaiming my time,
it's been a
Director.
Disgrace to the American
Director,
people.
I'm reclaiming my time.
You can reclaim your time all you want.
Mr. Chairman, you're going to allow a witness to speak this way?
Yeah, they have to. Eric Swalwell, you don't have to sit there and just be a battering ram. Cash Clash Part 2. Wild scene on Capitol Hill and partisan Dems try to land brutal blows on Cash. The problem is Cash came in to fight back.
Number one.
I'm stunned and shocked by their failure to understand just how painful this is for people in this country who knew Charlie Kirk, and they're continuing to operate on one principle. If Donald Trump feels something, they hate it.
Aftermath of Charlie Kirk's killing will be causing massive clashes, firings, and worry about the direction of the country. I have an idea. Why not lower the temperature on all sides, calm down, and wait for Sunday, the memorial service, and we'll figure out where we go from here. So the other big story, I mean, there was so many going on yesterday. You have the evolving of the investigation and more details about the shooter, the suspect, and how he turned himself in. You have the Cash Patel absolutely fireworks that were nonstop for the second straight day. Also, the fired CDC director who's suing to get her job back and why she is not doing that job now under HHS because Robert F. Kennedy says, I can't trust her. And also, when it comes to vaccines, what is the schedule going to be when it's finally released for parents? New parents, parents are used to following instructions unless you're in the medical field. What are those new instructions? Dr. Nicole Sapphire joins us now. Dr. Sapphire, I know you're actually working right now. At the same time, you couldn't possibly be watching everything that took place yesterday as Susan Menarez, the former CDC director, tried to explain what bothered her about the direction of HHS. Where do you stand on this whole thing?
Well, Brian, from my hospital computer, going in and out, you know, in between procedures, because I find it very important to watch some of this back and forth. I can tell you it's incredibly frustrating, someone in the medical community watching this play out. I mean, essentially, these hearings are performative. It's everybody trying to get their social media clip to make them do well. But it seems like most people in these hearings care very little about the state of where we are in public health. What I'm seeing play out between RFK Jr. and Dr. Menarez, who, as you just mentioned, recently fired from her 29-day tenure as CDC director, it's really this back and forth. He said, she said, they're name calling, they're pointing fingers, and it is taking us so much farther from a place we need to be when we're talking about public health that it's frustrated. You also saw Senator Mullins yesterday, when he was going after Dr. Menarez, saying, we know that this, you know, this meeting between you and RFK Jr., it was recorded. And so all of a sudden we're like, well, if there's a recording, absolutely, let's hear the recording. And then we don't have to hear this back and forth. He's obviously walked back that statement. Ultimately, what we need to have are honest and transparent conversations about what's going on. Dr. Menarez says that RFK Jr. told her that she needs to, quote unquote, rubber stamp whatever the ACIP recommendations are going to come out of today and tomorrow. That's what I'm live streaming today. ACIP is starting to meet right now to talk about MMR vaccines, hepatitis B vaccines
Just breaking up a little bit, but while we get settled down your shot, I know you heard this yesterday, but for the audience that didn't, here's Susan Menares, the former CDC director, talking about what she's worried about when it comes to vaccines. Listen, cut 46.
I believe preventable diseases will return, and I believe that we will have our children harmed for things that we know they do not need to be harmed by. Polio, measles, diphtheria, whooping cough.
So I don't know. Is RFK recommending getting rid of all that? I know for sure he doesn't think children, infants, newborns should get the COVID-19 shot. I know they're also debating hepatitis. So what do you think? Where do you stand as a mom and as a doctor?
Well, her concerns are valid. We're already seeing it play out with measles. We're already seeing it with whooping cough. We have a rise in cases throughout the country, and that's because of declining vaccination rates. I think that there is a legitimate conversation to be had about the current childhood vaccine recommendation schedule, specifically birth doses of hepatitis B, and also some of the other recommendations. I do not believe that RFK Jr. is going to formally recommend doing away with the majority of these vaccines. I think they want to talk about the timing of it. I think that the way that this is being communicated to the public is incredibly poor, and that is why you're seeing a lot of the fuel of the vaccine hesitancy. And so while I think that there are good conversations to be had, I don't think that they're going about this in the right manner. There feels like a lot of lack of transparency in the HHS right now, despite they're saying that there's radical transparency. They are trying to make a lot of changes or recommendations, and they're not being forthcoming with the data that is fueling these recommendations and changes. All they have to do is show this and have a little bit more effective communication, and I think more of the country would be on board.
So they want to put all the vaccines to the test, make sure they're still valid, they're not causing after effects, still see if they're still needed. Do you object to that?
I absolutely do not object to that. I think that it is going to be very difficult to have these robust, randomized controlled trials that they keep saying are the standard gold science, which obviously they are. But these studies are going to be very difficult to have. What you can look at is the history over the last several decades and what it has done with the incidence and prevalence of disease, morbidity, mortality. But again, there's also been confounding factors that have contributed to this as well. When you talk about declining hepatitis B rates, like Dr. Menares is saying, she's like, the rates declined with the advent of the hepatitis B vaccine. She's right, but there is a confounding factor. In the 90s, at the same time the vaccine came out, the USPSTF also recommended screening pregnant women for hepatitis B. So this also likely contributed to the decline of cases. Plus, we also have tackling intravenous drug use, STDs or sexually transmitted infections. So there are a lot of things that have also resulted from hepatitis B. So I think we are able to have intelligent conversations of this. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, we're in a very polarizing society right now. And even if RFK Jr. is trying to do good work and he is having legitimate conversations, he is a polarizing figure. And mm-hmm. nothing that comes out of his HHS, his CDC, is going to be universally adopted because he's such a polarizing figure, even if right. It's for the best of the country.
And I know you got to run. The last question, how much does this have to do with the way the pandemic was handled? The mandates. I think that's what caused so much distrust before we even knew RFK was interested in this job.
Brian, throughout COVID for the last 5 years, I have said that the CDC is the biggest common factor for the anti-vaccine movement right now. The way that they mishandled the COVID vaccine, the mandates, and everything thereafter has fueled this massive distrust. And like I'm saying, there's nothing that's going to come out of the current CDC, the current HHS, that is going to get us back on track, even if they're doing good things. The messaging has to be better, and we have to make sure that the data is more transparent because we are way off track.
Also, empower the doctors to make their own decisions, and they could go and use their resources. I always would feel better about that. Dr. Sapphire.
Brian, real quick, I want to say one thing. It was very disingenuous of Dr. Menares yesterday to say. She's like, at the CDC, we don't make mandates. We just put forth recommendations. We learned during COVID, the ACIP, the CDC's recommendations, they get turned into mandates. The schools require them. So just because they are not requiring children to be given the Hep B vaccine at birth, the schools are. The schools say they have to have it. That's great where the point. Conversation needs to
And go. She knew that, and she said it anyway. Dr. Absolutely. Sapphire, thanks so much. You're the best. You were great during the pandemic, and you're great today. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having
Back
me,
Back in a moment.
Don't go anywhere. Brian Kilmeade will be right back.
radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
A party that's moved to the far left and for 10 years has not understood the appeal of Donald Trump and has failed to grapple, as Pogo would say, that the enemy is them. Donald Trump's a great politician. He's done a lot of smart things tactically and strategically. But he won 2 out of 3 presidential elections because the Democratic Party has failed to understand where it's out of step with the American people. It takes a lot at this point in my career to stun me.
That is Mark Halperin, who is not a conservative. He just says, with the Democratic Party trying to say it's both sides, instead of acknowledging the, some of the extreme language that's happening and blaming Trump, that's what Barack Obama was doing. That's what he was asked by Laura Ingraham last night about what Barack Obama was saying. Now, Barack Obama did come out and say, I feel for the Kirk family. I don't agree on much, but that's just a horrific thing and you shouldn't have violence in politics. And I get that. I don't want to let anyone think that he just got up there and spoke in a partisan way. But this is also what he said. Cut 6.
When I hear not just our current president, but his aides, who have a history of calling political opponents vermin, enemies, who need to be targeted, that speaks to a broader problem that we have right now.
So let's just think about this. Now, you know this. I know most of the people who watch MSNBC or Jimmy Kimmel don't. You know that in the months after Hillary Clinton lost the election, he was plotting and planning to destroy President Trump's presidency and maybe get him out in some type of trumped-up scandal. So if he was that concerned about the country, perhaps he wouldn't have went out of his way to gum us up for 2.5 years in a trumped up scandal that didn't exist about a relationship with Russia that wasn't happening. But you put everything in place. You unleash the dogs. John Podesta's idea. Hillary Clinton was behind it, financed it. You knew about it. You had meetings about it. It all came down in December. Now he's talking about, well, Donald Trump's always talking about it. The reason why Donald Trump is pushing back, clearing the decks, making sure these departments are cleansed of people that hate him, is because last time he didn't worry about it, and he had people on his own team in his own White House working against him because he didn't know who he could trust. And now he doesn't even take for granted anyone can be trusted. He just goes to the people that he knows best. So Barack Obama, who talked about coming together, not really talking about coming together here. And to say that at the same time and not acknowledge that Joe Biden called Trump supporters garbage, that Hillary Clinton says you could put the supporters in a basket of deplorables. And those are just the highlights. The MAGA people, extremist, MAGA extremist, they never ran from that acronym because they liked that acronym. Joe Biden tried to make that a bad word. For people who want to make America great, they never backed off that word. President Obama wanted to make it a bad word. It didn't. Why he's still involved in, you know, in bare knuckle politics, I don't get. Move on with your life. You got a Netflix deal, write another book. You're a former professor, you're a lawyer. I'm sure there's things that Al Gore can have you do or other Democrats would hire you. I know you got speeches. You get, millions of dollars per speech. And a lot of times they're not even speeches like you did yesterday in Erie, Pennsylvania. It was a conversation you were having. So that's pretty much, I want to play a little bit more. Cut 7.
What happened to Charlie Kirk was horrific and a tragedy. What happened, as you mentioned, to the state legislators in Minnesota, that is horrific. It is a tragedy. And there are no ifs, ands, or buts about it. The central premise of our democratic system is that we have to be able to disagree and have sometimes really contentious debates without resort to violence.
Yeah, and stop with the Nazi. Stop with the fascist. Nazi and fascist dictator. They say it every day, nonstop, every day. So if you have some crazy guy behind a keyboard without any friends wondering about his sexuality, he thinks if I want to matter, if I want to protect trans people, maybe I'll go assassinate somebody. And that's not a would-be scenario. It seems to be the scenario because it's that important. Here's more from Mark Halperin, Cut 14.
I'm stunned and shocked by their failure to, and in a clip with President Obama, their failure to understand just how painful this is for people in this country who knew Charlie Kirk. And they continue to not understand him. They don't know what he accomplished. They don't know his heart. They don't know what he's about. And they're continuing to operate on one principle. If Donald Trump feels something, they hate it.
It's true. I don't get it. So we had Joe Manchin in on Monday. He doesn't feel that way. John Fetterman went over to Mar-a-Lago. He doesn't feel that way. I talked to Harold Ford last night. I did the five. He doesn't feel that way. I think there's a Julian Epstein, who's on our show frequently, Democrat. It's going to be a Democrat. Going to vote for a Democrat. He doesn't feel that way. The fact is right now, I cannot name one outside John Fetterman, any senator in the Senate currently that would say nice things about Trump, even off camera. And I can't hear, as a congressman, I don't know anybody, hundreds, ever say anything like, oh, that's a good idea that Trump had. I heard Tom Suozzi came out and said, you know, I love that he shut down the border. We need to shut down the border. It was important. He did a good job. But when it comes to the record of immigration, we disagree. I mean, the fact is it's single digits. So maybe Trump could do more outreach if that's possible, and not in this setting, I don't think. Now, people say that Trump feels he's vulnerable at the midterms. That's why he's going through the gerrymandering thing and pushing for Indiana, for Texas, possibly Florida, maybe a few others. I know he's pitching for Missouri to go ahead and gerrymander, he says, because make it more representative of the people in that state that gave him the popular vote. But he's looking to squeeze every seat out, not because he doesn't feel like he's doing a good job. It's because he knows it's going to be very close in a divided Congress where he's almost got no chance of winning over Democrats for any of his policies. And very few Republicans won over with Joe Biden. I think they went over on the gun legislation. They might have went over on the infrastructure deal. But that was just a handful a couple of times. And then there was just absolutely no effort. But that's where we're at right now. But I think we're seeing now Trump is missing one piece: the benefits of the tariffs and the benefits of the big, beautiful bill. If he could start getting the economic engine going, that looks worse than he thought when he took over. But now we're all about lowering the rates. The market boomed. He's going to get another rate. The rate's going to decrease again, I think, in December. Another one, they say, early in the winter or early in the new year. Okay. But then you got to see some of these programs help working class people and some of these jobs coming back for people in America, the blue collar jobs. Right now, unemployment's going up a little bit. That's not going to help. And the price of goods are going up a little bit, but not nearly as much as the critics said that tariffs would. Listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. We bring you the latest breaking from Britain as they have an active press conference right now. And you know the President of the United States, he likes those press conferences.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
We've solved seven wars, wars that were unsolvable, wars that couldn't be negotiated or done. The U.S. has done seven of them. The one that I thought would be easiest would be because of my relationship with President Putin, but he's let me down. He's really let me down. Was going to be Russia and Ukraine, but we'll see how that turns out. But that turned out to be, I thought it might be among the easiest of the group, but we had settled just about every conflict. And as you know, we're working very hard on Israel and Gaza, all that's happening over there. We've solved seven wars, wars that were unsolvable, wars that
And listen to right now, the press conference is going on. It's very interesting. You have questions all over the place right now between the UK Prime Minister Starmer and the President of the United States. He got one question, and the question was simple: why do you run again? We haven't heard something that general in a long time, and he told everybody why he ran again. But the previous question was the one you just heard about Vladimir Putin and Russia. He goes, yeah, he let me down. You know, I thought it'd be easy to solve because I thought of my relationship with him, but he's totally let me down. The follow-up question was, you said your president has let you down. He goes, yeah, he has. And right now, the Russians are just out there killing soldiers. But they are actually more Russians being killed at a greater rate than Ukrainian soldiers. And then he went on to say that if it wasn't for the disastrous way in which we left Afghanistan, they wouldn't have looked at the failed American leadership and made us look vulnerable. I use the word vulnerable. And they wouldn't have invaded Ukraine. But he said, we lost Bagram. I'm going to give you some breaking news. We're talking to Afghanistan now about getting it back. Wow. And he said, they need things from us. So maybe that's what we want back. And we need it strategically. That's interesting. Let's been a Republican study committee chairman, a real impactful congressman from Texas, August Pfluger. Chairman, welcome back.
Oh, Brian, great to be with you. And what just the topics you're talking about. I mean, can I answer the question of why he ran again? It's because our country was a disaster. And, you know, he was the only person that could put it back on track. So, I mean, that's an easy answer. And he didn't say that, but I'll say it for him.
Yeah, he said the border. He said the border was the breaking point for him. He realized he's won 2020. He said, I'm sure I won 2020. And as we know how he feels. But he said the border. When I saw these people streaming in, I said, I just got to get back. But what about the news that he's trying to get Bagram back?
Well, you know, look, he's right to say that the tipping point was our disastrous withdrawal. We lost 13 Americans. We gave up a strategic location. Yes, President Trump was looking to withdraw, but he would never have done it without a conditions-based withdrawal, without, you know, maintaining that perch, that strategic perch that we had there, that so many countless lives were lost in that fight. And so this is going to be an interesting discussion. And also, he's absolutely right. Putin is acting disgracefully, and Congress wants to help President Trump. We want to offer him leverage, I think specifically through sanctions and another opportunity for him to show Putin that we care and we are strong and he is strong.
I know. Listen, you know I'm firmly in Ukraine's side. They are the victims. I looked at Zelensky as an elite leader, not a questionable leader. I can't believe the way he's been forced to step up over the last 3.5 years. There's nothing I believe that he did that warranted invasion. That's how I feel, and I'll take on all comers, but I know it's rare on the Republican Party now to believe that, and Democrats just want to do the opposite of what Trump wants. So you do believe that strict sanctions coming down. He also, I think, has got a good point. Why don't you put 50% sanctions on China, too? Why just me and India? Why don't you do it, too? So they're going back and forth on that. Also, just let them use their long-range rockets, many of which they made themselves. Germany, the U.S., and U.K. have given it to them. Let them go into Moscow, where the armaments are being made, where the drones are being manufactured.
You're right. And that's exactly the point is, he is encouraging people who have the most to lose, that's Europeans, to take part in this. Take part in the sanctions against China. Take part in putting GDP spending percentages towards defense. Take part in being part of the solution and not just complaining about it. And nobody could have done this but him. And I'll say on the, you know, especially on the drones and things like that, the innovation that we're seeing out of Ukraine and unfortunately out of Russia, we really need to take note in this. We need our defense and the acquisition reform that Congress is calling for when we passed the NDAA last week to really help President Trump to get his message out that we need to be sharp, we need to have good weapon systems, and we need to deter would-be adversaries. That's the whole point. Biden did nothing to deter anybody, and that's why President Trump has made such a difference.
And we know, too, the Air Defense Patriots, the first shipment paid for by NATO, has arrived in or on its way to Ukraine. So that's good. We still have to find a way that the Ukrainians are cutting edge, but they're finding a way to neutralize or jam these drones coming in. Can we do that? What if 10,000 drones headed towards the U.S. border? Could we stop them? You don't stop them with Patriot missiles. So that's a question that Secretary of War Pete Hegseth's got to answer. Do you feel it? And if I'm worried about that, I'm sure they are.
Do we have the technology? Sure. Do we have the capacity with, you know, low-cost weapon systems that can achieve those effects? I think that's the challenge right now. And we need all of us in – you know, I'm a veteran and I'm still serving the reserves. I mean, we've all got to be a part of this discussion of let's have low-cost solutions that actually achieve the results. You know, remember the Ukrainians sent that truck into Russia and then the drones popped out of the truck and they went and attacked their bombers? Well, I'm worried about that. I serve on Homeland Security. Are there not threats to the United States, to our ports that have drones that, you know, could attack us? I mean, sure. I mean, the technology is there. We need to be thinking about how do we defend ourselves against that?
Yeah, they've done some very innovative things while trying to survive. A couple of things. I know you're all over Homeland Security, the crackdown on crime. When you walk around, just as August Pfluger, what do you see? What is it like?
What a breath of fresh air to have the president take control of a situation that was completely out of control with, 17-year-olds that were running around terrorizing businesses and visitors and foreign leaders and, Congress men and women, the staffers and the shootings and the homicide. And it is so much better. There is such a sense of security. I know in my office that interns and staffers, when they walk to and from, feel a lot better. He is absolutely right. And anybody in Chicago who's standing in his way of trying to reduce violent crime, this is what a huge mistake to side with violent criminals. D.C. should be a test case for every blue city out there to get back on track and be safe.
Operation Midway is underway, and it's where ICE has been bulked up, and they're trying to scoop up without any help from local cops. They're not allowed. I'm sure they would love to do that and to crack down on, I think, in some of these oppressed neighborhoods, but they haven't gone full bore in. They're about to go into Memphis. I was shocked to see this yesterday. I didn't hear it, but I'm reading it. Congressman Steve Cohen of Tennessee said to Kash Patel, "I commend you for what you did. I think the FBI coming into Memphis, we have a crime problem. That's good. The FBI has helped. The DEA will help. The ATF will help. I don't think the National Guard will help." He went on to say, "We've got some crime, but it's not a troubled city. We're not troubled. We hope the National Guard doesn't come in." Why not? You're the murder capital, the violent. You have more violence in your small city than the big cities per capita. If you could have men and women in uniform, why would you not want that deterrent? What bothers you about that?
That is the question that these blue city mayors are going to have to answer. It doesn't matter if they're in red states or not. You know, like Tennessee is a good red state. But if you've got a problem in these cities, well, ask for help. And President Trump is saying no more cashless bail, no more DAs who aren't putting the screws to these violent criminals. Why wouldn't you want the help? Tell me one business owner in this country, tell me one resident of a downtown city anywhere that doesn't want to be safer. It's absolutely ridiculous, and the political posturing has to stop. Look, I'm glad that Mr. Cohen said thank you for, to the president for at least some of it. I had a Democrat on the Homeland Security Committee that said, you know what? If there are juveniles who are committing acts of terrorism, we need to be charging them. I said, let's go. Yeah. Let's do the legislation right now. I will co-sponsor it with you, and we will get this thing signed into law.
All right. Tell me, too, Chairman, you're introducing or reintroducing the COUNT Act, which codifies, you say, the abandoned 2019 executive order by Trump, putting citizen questions back on the census that comes after Biden reversed the order allowing for illegals to be counted in the 2020 census. We're not in census time now. So you want to pass this through the House and get this through the Senate?
Yes, and we need to put the question on the census of whether you're a citizen or not. It affects congressional seats in places like New York or California, the sanctuary states and cities that we have people. I mean, you had millions of people let in under Biden that fled to these cities and these states. So we want to count it. We want to know for congressional apportionment. We want to know for funding. And quite frankly, for every citizen out there, we want your power, your ability as a citizen under the Constitution to not be diluted by those that are not here legally. It's pretty simple. I'm honestly, this is a bipartisan issue, and we want the COUNT Act to be something that our country gets back to. And by the way, the Supreme Court upheld that 2019 executive order and said, yes, you can ask whether they're a citizen or not. So they've already decided on this.
I want to bring you to something else. You've been in a million of those committee meetings. You bring people there for information, others for scrutiny. Kash Patel's last 2 days has been as wild as anything I've seen. I want people at home to hear, for example, his clash with Eric Swalwell. Cut 25.
Billy's I'm going to borrow your terminology and call bullshit on your entire career in Congress.
I'm reclaiming my time,
it has been
Director.
A disgrace to the American
Director,
people.
I'm reclaiming my time.
You can reclaim your time all you want.
Mr. Chairman, you're going to allow a witness to speak, Mr. Swalwell?
So, I mean, he came in and said, BS, I'm calling your time at the FBI BS. That was the response. But this has been for 2 days now. How do you put in perspective this tone and temper?
Well, I mean, the FBI had been weaponized. Jim Jordan's questioning was, are you spying on Americans anymore? He said no. Are you, are you cooking the books on crime data? He said no. We have to reestablish the FBI and the there are hardworking people, and there have been hardworking men and women inside the FBI, but they were so weaponized, they were so politicized. And the fight right now, the friction right now is, well, that is that too extreme? Is that no, it's not extreme, because they have to get back to being a trusted agency. We as citizens, left and right, doesn't matter your political party or not, have to trust government agencies. And the fact is they couldn't be trusted because they weaponized everything. And by the way, it was against Donald Trump. So, he's standing up for the things that he's doing to reestablish that trust. And of course, there's going to be friction.
So a little bit more of the idiocy that goes on, and it goes with Congressman Jasmine Crockett of Texas. You might have heard of that state. Cut 31.
I didn't hear anything from the FBI about what was going on. And again, black people kept saying, how did we end up in this? Because the numbers are so very clear that white supremacy is a problem.
Did Kash Patel do a bad job at white supremacy?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, you know, this is where our dear friend Charlie Kirk was so good. And he would talk about white privilege. And he would ask, it doesn't matter what color you were, can you not do something that a white person can do? And they would say, no, of course I can. I can do anything I set my mind to. And that's where he was so, so good. And, you know,
and the answer is then why you need special rules to put your hand on the scale in order for you to get jobs or opportunities when you could do it on your own, right?
That's exactly right. And these types of thoughts, nobody takes that seriously. That's a ridiculous talking point that Jasmine Crockett would utter. And honestly, when you think about a racial divide, it's because of those statements. It's because that she continues to foster that kind of hatred between races, which is not what MLK stood for and is not what our civil rights movement was intended to do. And we've gotten far away from that. And God bless Charlie Kirk for the work that he did to get the country back into a cohesive, patriotic spirit.
Have you gotten calls from any Democrats behind the scenes saying, hey, guys, we got to tone down the temperature? You know, the whole fascist Hitler every single day, autocrat, dictator, Trump. And you see the text messages, is that what this guy thought about Charlie Kirk and people that support him? Have you gotten any calls from the other side on that?
Yes. And unfortunately, it's too few, but I have, and it's refreshing. And there were a handful of Democrats who came to the vigil. Wouldn't it have been nice to see Hakeem Jeffries standing directly next to Mike Johnson? Guess what? If this was somebody on the left that was assassinated, I guarantee you that Mike Johnson would have been right there next to him, mourning that loss, saying, guys, we got to do better. But there are those. We need them to stand up. They're true Americans. They do believe it. But people like Jasmine Crockett are speaking with a loud megaphone of hatred, which is not where I stand. And I, by the way, Brian, I've called for the same type of unity. I'm mourning. Charlie was a personal friend of mine. We have to get to a point in this country where we condemn every act of violence, doesn't matter where it is. And I think Republicans have done that. I really do. And justice is coming. And in this country, if we can't have political discourse, then violence begins. And that's quoting Charlie Kirk.
Go get him. Congressman August Pfluger, thanks so much.
Thanks, Brian.
Back in a moment.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
This is Jimmy Failla, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a 3-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
He has let me down. I mean, he's killing many people, and he's losing more people than he's killing. I mean, frankly, the Russian soldiers are being killed at a higher rate than the Ukrainian soldiers. But, he said, let me down. I don't like to see. It's death. You know, it doesn't affect the United States. We have, other than unless you end up in a world war over this thing, you could. This was a thing that would have never happened had I been president. If I were president, it would have never happened. And it didn't happen for 4 years. Most people agree it didn't happen, nor was it close to happening. And I spoke to President Putin about Ukraine. It was the apple of his eye. I've said that many times. It was. But he would have never done what he did, except that he didn't respect the leadership of the United States.
So the president of the United States is answering more questions on that, and that's such an honest answer. You would never get that from another president. Maybe people think that should have been tougher, could have been stronger, less tough, ignore it. I mean, people are all over the spectrum on it. But he just also took a follow-up question on that with Vladimir Putin. He does not regret going into Alaska, but he said eventually he's going to be stopping that war. I'm curious to see how. Also, one of the questioners to Trump was to Starmer said, President Trump said that you have to stop, Europeans have to stop buying Russian oil before he puts more sanctions on Russia. Does he not have a point? And you see Trump just smile and look at Starmer and go, basically, go ahead, answer the question. Does he not have a point? Absolutely. And I thought it was a really good press conference. It was informative. It was calm. And here's another note. I like that they're next to each other. So many times when the one leader answers a question, you don't know the reaction of the other leader, but they're shoulder to shoulder. So you could see how they respond. And he did not want any part of the question. Why are you recognizing a Palestinian state? So they said the Gaza thing is going to be over. And so is this. It's going to be happening shortly. President Trump feels very good, I'm sure, about what came out of this. He's going to sit down with Martha McCallum shortly. And I think be able to, I think she's going to have a great interview. Certainly a lot of news that he has not commented on to get a perspective. I saw what happened in front of the cameras. The pomp and circumstances was off the charts great. Everyone agrees. Trump was perfect. King was perfect. I felt like I was in the 1700s, the 18th century, really. And then today it seems to be very strong behind the scenes, but we'll get the real story later. We want to see if these pledges are going to be actual dollars. I hope so. The Blackstones, the Microsoft, you got the money. Brian Kennedy here.
It's Will Kane Country. Watch it live at noon Eastern, Monday through Thursday at foxnews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss the show. Listen and follow the podcast 5 days a week at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi everyone, Brian Kilmeade here. Thanks so much for listening. We got a busy hour coming your way. Also, be able to squeeze in some calls. I hope there is so much going on right now. The president just wrapped up. We pretty much wrapped up his trip, had the business meeting, the pomp and circumstances. This hour we're going to be joined by Julian Epstein to review it. Mark Thiessen at the bottom of the hour to bring us up to date. He also wrote a great column of the best way to honor Charlie Kirk's memory. Sunday, we're going to be live 10 o'clock Eastern time. That's just going to be a couple hours after the wrap up of Charlie Kirk's memorial service at the Cardinals football stadium over in Arizona. Seats 63,000, 70,000 could all be sold out. Last time I was there, I've been there three times. Every time for a Super Bowl, and I think this is going to be a Super Bowl-sized crowd. So before we get to Julian, let's get to the big three.
Number three.
It's a singular privilege to be the first American president welcomed here, but this is truly one of the highest honors of my life. Such respect for you and such respect for your country.
There you go. President Trump in the UK, he loved it. The respect shown reveals how far the world has come in understanding who Trump is and what he can do as Trumpism begins to spread into UK cities. I'll explain.
Number two. I'm going to borrow your terminology and call bullshit on your entire career in Congress.
I'm reclaiming my time,
it's been a disgrace to the American people.
I'm reclaiming my time.
You can reclaim your time all you want.
Mr. Chairman, you're going to allow a witness to speak this way?
The cash clash, too. Wild scene on Capitol Hill and partisan Dems try to land brutal blows on Cash Patel. But he will not take it. He will not sit there and get hammered, especially because he knows far too much about Eric Swalwell, Jamie Raskin, and people like Senator Adam Schiff.
Number one.
I'm stunned and shocked by their failure to understand just how painful this is for people in this country who knew Charlie Kirk, and they're continuing to operate on one principle. If Donald Trump feels something, they hate it.
Exactly. Aftermath of the Charlie Kirk killing still causing massive clashes, firings, and worry about the country. I have an idea. Why not lower the temperature, calm down as we get set for Sunday's memorial service? So President Obama, I don't think, helped much yesterday. Basically blamed Trump and his rhetoric. Now he's just posted something that said about Jimmy Kimmel's firing. After years of complaining about cancel culture, the current administration has taken it to a new dangerous level by routinely threatening regulatory action against media companies unless they muzzle or fire reporters and commentators. Now, here's a guy that tried to keep Fox out of the press room at the White House. Here's a guy that constantly complained about one company who actually called him out and would criticize his programs when they needed criticizing, to the point where Hillary Clinton was pleased because we're the only one questioning him hard during the primary process. But he doesn't seem to remember any of that. He doesn't remember that President Biden came out and said that Trump supporters are garbage, that the MAGA supporters are extremists. He doesn't seem to remember that, that Hillary said bask in the deplorables. How do you expect any of these people to process all this? So now you have Jimmy Kimmel out. And before we bring Julian Epstein in, I just want to play some of the extended. We all heard the one clip that he talked about, the short clip that he talked about President Trump and trying to mislabel the shooter as a lefty when he's a MAGA supporter. He isn't a MAGA supporter. That is, I know you're a comedian, but that is total misinformation. This guy hated Charlie Kirk. Some people can't be talked to. They got to be killed. He is a lefty. His friends, his trans partner, it's his friends, his family said it. But Jimmy Kimmel didn't get the memo. And that's important because a lot of people, young people, I guess the few people, the million people that he gets to watch, think that that's the truth. But that's not the reason he gets canceled. That is affiliates. This next star, who had mostly about 30 or 40 ABC affiliates, said if he's not going to apologize for Monday, I'm pulling the show. And then ABC pulled him. Here's an extended clip of Jimmy Kimmel, Cut 17.
We hit some new lows over the weekend with the MAGA gang desperately trying to characterize this kid who murdered Charlie Kirk as anything other than one of them and doing everything they can to score political points from it. In between the finger pointing, there was grieving. On Friday, the White House flew the flags at half staff, which got some criticism. But on a human level, you can see how hard the president is taking this.
My condolences on the loss of your friend Charlie Kirk. May I ask, sir, personally, how are you holding up over the last day and a half, sir?
I think very good. And by the way, right there, you see all the trucks. They've just started construction of the new ballroom for the White House, which is something they've been trying to get, as you know, for about 150 years. And it's going to be a beauty.
Yes. He's at the fourth stage of grief, construction. Demolition. Construction. This is not how an adult grieves the murder of someone he called a friend. This is how a four-year-old mourns a goldfish, okay?
I mean, it's so inappropriate, so inaccurate, so tone-deaf. President is upset as anyone, like a family member. If you watched our show on Friday, he was there. If you saw him Thursday commemorate the 24 years since the 9/11 attacks, he was not even the same person. He was so dispirited and down after the assassination of his friend, someone he considered a son. And this guy thinks it's funny. So I'm not, this is accumulation. That's what ABC decided to do. I would not say that Trump's hands on this, but I know he loves it. Julian Epstein served as chief White House counsel for chief counsel to the House Judiciary Committee and staff director of the House Oversight Committee from 96 to 2001. Is a Democrat. Julian, your thoughts about those remarks, and are you concerned that Barack Obama saying that the president's canceling people that don't like him?
Well, first of all, good morning, Brian, and thank you for having me back. And my condolences to you. I know Charlie was a friend of yours, yep, as he was to so many people over at Fox. And my condolences to his family. It's a tragic day. You know, I can't think of, you know, the last time in our lifetime where we've had a major political figure assassinated. And here was a guy who was assassinated for no other reason other than his willingness to go into the public square and engage people and try to show people where they may have not fully thought out their point of view. It's a tragic loss for the country. My response to your question is, I think the left is getting dangerously close, if they haven't already crossed the line, into a culture of violence. The left rhetoric is creating an environment that invites violence. When you call people a fascist all the time, you would think that you are inviting people to respond, to defend against fascism, which would imply a violent response. So you see the left, I think, that is dangerously in a number of ways creating an environment of violence. And then the whole bit with Jimmy Kimmel is the mocking, the ridiculing of the assassination and the mourners while they are in mourning. And this seems to me just to be getting dangerously close to a culture of violence. We've seen this with the left refusing to denounce the pro-Hamas protesters on college campuses. We've seen this with the violence against ICE officials in LA, the summer of 2020, the assassination attempts against Trump, the assassinations of the Israeli embassy employees, the attempted assassination of Kavanaugh. I mean, this is starting to become a trend where left-wing extremists are taking the rhetoric of Democratic politicians into their own hands and saying they have given us a framework to justify a violent response. And rather than understanding, having self-awareness to understand how the left is creating this environment, what the left is doing is, they are sort of minimizing the gravity of the moment. There are some that are actually celebrating the death. And there are others like Barack Obama yesterday and Jimmy Kimmel's grotesque comments, the ABC reporters' sort of bizarre theory of the Romeo and Juliet theory. They are sort of just not understanding the importance of this moment. They're showing gross insensitivity to the tens of millions of people that are mourning. So, and they've just missed the moment.
You're perfect to ask this because I don't know the answer. You know, if you ask me things about the economy, I'm not a big economist. You might say, don't you know? And then fill in the blank. I don't really track the economy on a micro level. I don't have that rich background. When you ask intelligent people sometimes things like, you know, the Hunter Biden laptop was real. No, it wasn't. It was Russian. No, it was real. They just don't know. They don't know the whole Russia thing was a hoax. They don't understand really what happened at Charlottesville. Now, I'm not saying President Trump is perfect, but when things are proven to be inaccurate, they just don't even get it. So Jimmy Kimmel saying what he said, does he fully understand that Charlie Kirk was like the president's son? That they were with each other sometimes for weeks on end, that he considered Eric and Don Jr. especially like a brother, that he was everywhere. Like you, it's not up to you to judge how somebody handles somebody's death. Like, do you think he really is oblivious to the other side like that?
I think a lot of left wingers, a lot of all of us live in bubbles, and the algorithms feed us constantly limited or misinformation. I think that's a major problem of social media. But I think Kimmel not only shows a gross insensitivity, a grotesque insensitivity to the people who are mourning Charlie Kirk's death, but a remarkable ignorance. And he claims that the shooter was somebody from the right when there's just all the evidence is to the contrary.
Yeah, I know you're a comedian, but is that a problem? Julian, he's a comedian. People go, well, he's a comedian. What's the big deal? It's a really big deal because your monologue, you're taking from the news.
Well, any fool can read the front page of the newspapers and know that it's not true. And it shows you what happens when people who come ideological, they just screen out information that contradicts their worldview. And yeah, I mean, I think the Hunter Biden laptop is a good example. I talk to liberals and progressives all the time who still think it was that was a false story and still believe in the Russia hoax. And the problem with the left, Brian, is they never steel man the argument. They straw man the argument. Steel man the argument means you take the other side's best argument. So you take the conservatives or the Republicans' best argument, strongest argument on an issue, say the Hunter Biden laptop, and then you try to dissect it. But the left doesn't do that. The left never tries to steel man the argument. The left always will take the gibberish that is coming from sort of social media or the legacy media that is not reporting the issue fairly or fully, and they just sort of regurgitate and repeat that. And that's what most people are doing. They're just sort of in politics today. They're just sort of repeating their positions largely from an emotional standpoint. I mean, sort of I constantly run into progressives who think that the only thing in the world that matters is how they emotionally understand a moral issue. And the facts never seem to matter. And I think Jimmy Kimmel's sort of obscene comments the other day. Reflect that. By the way, this is not cancel culture. Cancel culture was when you deplatform people because of their political views. This is companies taking a position to let people go, or schools firing teachers because they are really bad people. When you ridicule the death of somebody who is a hero to tens of millions of people around the world and show such gross insensitivity and such an inability to grasp the moment, that's not the kind of person that you want to have teaching our kids. That's right. Not the kind of person that ought to be doing a late night TV show. No one's canceling them. Nobody's cutting their free speech. But they are saying you are so reprehensible that you don't belong in this position. So it's very different from cancel culture.
Yeah, I think it very much is. Like, for example, I interviewed that nurse on Tuesday who went up to a doctor who was celebrating, a surgeon who was celebrating Charlie Kirk's death. He goes, "You're a doctor. How could you be celebrating Charlie Kirk's death?" "Well, he's a terrible person. Don't agree with his politics." He goes, "You're a doctor. Your job is to, you know, do no harm." And so he ends up getting fired. But yeah, what else is he doing? If Charlie Kirk came in there with a bullet in him, would he have not operated, or would he have let him die? I mean, that's the indication by the way he acted. But I want to bring it to
something. You know, the funny thing, Brian, the funny thing about it real quickly is I talk to progressives a lot of time, and the people that minimize his death and say they didn't like his point of view, I always ask them, what is it that you didn't like about his point of view? What were the positions that he took that you found so offensive? And they're constantly at a loss as to being able to explain what it is exactly that they didn't like. And I constantly point out, he's merely sort of questioning the orthodoxy and showing where the orthodoxy isn't fully thought through. It's remarkably thin, the criticism, when you peel back the onion.
So Kamala Harris has got this book coming out, desperate to get sales, obviously, but she's got to say things that she hadn't said before. The latest story is she picked Tim Walz as his second choice as her running mate, because essentially she felt Americans were too racist, anti-Semitic, and homophobic to accept her preferred option. Pete Buttigieg was her choice. She said, and she described Buttigieg as her first choice, but later deemed the openly gay former transportation secretary to be too big of a risk. Quote, "Would have been an ideal partner if I were a straight white man. But we're already asking a lot of America to accept a woman, a black woman married to a Jewish man. Part of me wanted to say, screw it, just let's do it. But knowing what was at stake, it was too big of a risk." Wow. Does she think America's terrible or what?
She does. I mean, she thinks about everything in identity terms, which most Americans don't. Second, she assumes that having a gay person on the ticket is a liability. That's news for a progressive. I thought progressives thought that would be something that would be something that was a good thing. You know, I think Tim Walz was a terrible choice. Every time I see him, I think of the Saturday Night Live character, Chris Farley, the sort of the slightly overweight guy who was sort of just clumsily like a bull in a china shop, working his way through a room and knocking everything over in its wake. Josh Shapiro was not selected because he was Jewish. It was not selected because he was pro-Israel. Yeah. The problem that
real
she
quick,
doesn't
Julie,
get,
I'm up against it. 10 seconds.
Most Democrats don't get. She was a horrible candidate, and she was very too far left, and nothing was going to fix that.
And this book should finish her. Finish her. With
oh,
with her
I
own
think
party.
She's been finished. I think she's been finished.
I hear you. Yeah. Julian Epstein, very insightful. Thanks so much. Back in a moment. Mark Thiessen in 10 minutes.
You're with Brian Kilmeade.
This is Jason Chaffetz from the Jason in the House podcast. Join me every Monday to dive deeper into the latest political headlines and chat with remarkable guests.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com
or wherever you download podcasts.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
What this whole episode...
We've solved seven wars, wars that were unsolvable, wars that couldn't be negotiated or done. The U.S. has done seven of them. The one that I thought would be easiest would be because of my relationship with President Putin, but he's let me down. He's really let me down. It was going to be Russia and Ukraine.
But we'll see how that turns out. But that turned out to be, I thought it might be among the easiest of the group. But we had settled just about every conflict. And as you know, we're working very hard on Israel and Gaza, all that's happening over there. He has let me down. I mean, he's killing many people, and he's losing more people than he's, you know, than he's killing. Yeah. I mean, frankly, the Russian soldiers are being killed at a higher rate than the Ukrainian soldiers. But, yeah, he said, let me down. I don't like to see. It's death. You know, it doesn't affect the United States. We have, other than unless you end up in a world war over this thing, you could. This was a thing that would have never happened had I been president. If I were president, it would have never happened. And it didn't happen for 4 years. People, most people agree it didn't happen, nor was it close to happening. And I spoke to President Putin about Ukraine. It was the apple of his eye. I've said that many times. It was. But he would have never done what he did.
But he said he's really disappointed in him, and I think it's leading towards more action. I'm going to talk to Mark Thiessen about that. And he also talks about the best way to honor Charlie Kirk's memory. Don't move. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
It is outrageous. It's a page right out of Xi's playbook. This is just despicable, disgusting, and against democratic values.
America is a less free place if late-night comedians cannot do and say what they want.
We should not be going after people for this. Look, did he get some things wrong? Yeah. I mean, but he is not a commentator, a news anchor. This is somebody who's a comedian.
So that is some of the backlash from the suspension and possibly the firing of Jimmy Kimmel, who evidently is livid, according to the New York Post, that he was like, oh, I played some of the things earlier, maybe I'll play them again. But bottom line is 97% of his monologues are anti-Trump. Same thing with Colbert. Jimmy Fallon, if he does anything political, it's always negative to Trump, and he's tired of it. But he did not do this. This is done by the affiliates who don't want backlash from the general public who put Donald Trump in power, and they're tired of ignoring it, I guess. So the bulk of affiliates bowed out, and then the network caved, and they just put him on suspension. His ratings were terrible. We get better ratings at 7 a.m. than he gets without networks behind us. We're cable. Better network. We get better ratings at 7 a.m. than he gets at 11:30. Mark Thiessen joins us now, former chief speechwriter for George W. Bush, Washington Post columnist, Fox News contributor. Mark, welcome. Your thoughts about people that are freaking out about Kimmel's suspension?
I'd give Kilmeade his spot.
I'm too entertaining.
You're funnier than he is.
Right.
And you're not that funny.
That hurts.
Look, here's the thing. First of all, I think it's great that Kimmel's gone because he had incredibly low ratings and he wasn't funny. And that's honestly why he should be gone. I would have preferred if it happened just the way you described it without the intervention of Brendan Carr at the FEC, which I think taints it a little bit. But here's the reality. His ratings were worse than Colbert's.
Yep.
You know, there's what's one of the tragedies of this era of politicization of everything is that late night comedy has been ruined. I haven't watched one of these shows in years. I used to stay up at night to watch David Letterman and I'm old enough to have stayed up and watched Johnny Carson, and Jay Leno. I mean, and they would make fun of both sides. And it was, you know, people would laugh at the jokes at their own guy's expense because they knew he was making jokes about the other guy too. It wasn't political. It was just making fun of the world around us. And it was lighthearted and entertaining. And now it's just become so tedious to watch these people. But I'll tell you, I have a great idea, you know, because Chris Hayes apparently at MSNBC is really upset about this. Why doesn't MSNBC put him on against Gutfeld? And let's see who wins that rating war.
Yeah, why not?
I would love, let's go head to head, baby. MSNBC versus Fox. Kimmel on MSNBC, Gutfeld on Fox, and let's keep track of the numbers. I think that's not going to happen because nobody would watch. I don't think MSNBC can afford to have its ratings go down even further.
I just own, yeah. I used to know him. I remember when he was on Fox Sports. He used to come on all the time. He's a totally different guy now, clearly. But we'll see what happens. He'll do a podcast, and just like everybody else, you know, they'll have their moments. They'll be top 25. I'm sure Hollywood and those people around him, he'll get great celebrities. And he'll live happily ever after. So Stephen Colbert, too.
And so will we, because he won't be on the air and he won't be in my house.
Right. But it is kind of crazy. And this is a good, this is really an important question. So people that don't really like the news, they watch Entertainment Tonight or nothing, or watch their phones. They go into late night comedy. He has a younger audience and they hear a premise where he says, I'll let you hear this. And this is just a perfect example of what, where people get the premise wrong. Therefore, the comedy can't be funny. Cut 17.
We hit some new lows over the weekend with the MAGA gang desperately trying to characterize this kid who murdered Charlie Kirk as anything other than one of them and doing everything they can to score political points from
it. I'm just going to stop it because the rest isn't funny. But the premise is what some people believe is the truth. The Russia hoax, the laptop, unworthy fascists, and then you have the joke. But the setup does the damage.
But where's the joke? I mean, there's no humor in it. It's a political lecture. No one stays up till 11:30 at night or whatever to get lectured by Jimmy Kimmel. You know, that's why the ratings are collapsing. Is they're not entertaining. They're not funny. You know, the whole idea of late night TV was like you put it in a long day. You watch the evening news. You had dinner with your family, and before you fell asleep, you wanted something funny and lighthearted to help you go to bed. And that's gone. Johnny Carson, you know, Johnny Carson had Ronald Reagan on his show. He had, you know, he had Democrats, he had Republicans, but it was never political. He even said, it's like, what, who wants to hear from my, about my political views? It's like, that's not why they tune into me. And it's like, these guys have lost the narrative.
President of the United States, who has had a very successful trip in the UK. What happened behind closed doors will define that success. He's going to sit down with Martha McCallum today. We'll see you today at 3 p.m. Eastern time. But what he said in front of the camera is also important. Listen to this story. And he always says, I'll give you a little breaking news on what could be happening in Afghanistan.
They just went through the Afghanistan total disaster for no reason whatsoever. We're going to leave Afghanistan, but we're going to leave it with strength and dignity. And we're going to keep Bagram, the big air base, that one of the biggest air bases in the world. We gave it to them for nothing. We're trying to get it back, by the way. Okay, that could be a little breaking news. We're trying to get it back because they need things from us. We want that base back. But one of the reasons we want the base is, as you know, it's an hour away from where China makes its nuclear weapons.
Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so he's absolutely right that losing Bagram Air Base was an absolute disaster. If Biden had listened, what that tells you is that Donald Trump would have listened to the military commanders who recommended leaving about 2,500 troops in Afghanistan. He would have kept them at Bagram Air Base, and they would have been there to whack the terrorists and to keep an eye on China. And Biden didn't do that. And as a result, the Taliban got billions and billions of dollars in American military equipment that we left behind. The problem is you can't put the genie back in the bottle, because if we had kept Bagram back then the Taliban would have never taken over, right? We would not have been surrounded by Taliban. To send American troops into Afghanistan with the Taliban in power, with al-Qaeda and other people there, would put them at enormous risk. And also we'd have to give something to the Taliban in exchange for it. And I don't know why we would want to do that. So I think I think he's right. We should have Bagram, but I don't think that's the price is too high.
So you mean protecting Bagram in order to have Bagram would be too much risk?
Yeah, because the terrorists it literally would be surrounded by Islamic radicals. You know, I mean, the Taliban, you know, keep in mind, the Taliban came to power and, you know, a year later or so, we killed Ayman Zawahiri in Kabul. You know, they let the al-Qaeda back in.
And they're thriving camps now. I talked to somebody last night. There's camps.
This would be incredibly dangerous to put American troops in the middle of that. It would have been a different story before Biden's withdrawal because they would have never fallen. Afghan military would have kept control of the country, putting the genie back in the bottle is like putting Humpty Dumpty back together again once he's broken. It's really hard to do.
Yeah, I didn't like that story. Vladimir Putin was on the president's mind. We've got a question on it. Listen to this. First one.
We've solved seven wars, wars that were unsolvable, wars that couldn't be negotiated or done. The U.S. has done seven of them. The one that I thought would be easiest would be because of my relationship with President Putin, but he's let me down. He's really let me down. It was going to be Russia and Ukraine. But we'll see how that turns out. But that turned out to be, I thought it might be among the easiest of the group. But we had settled just about every conflict. And as you know, we're working very hard on Israel and Gaza.
Then he went on to say this on the follow-up question, a couple of questions later on this.
He has let me down. I mean, he's killing many people, and he's losing more people than he's killing. Yeah. I mean, frankly, the Russian soldiers are being killed at a higher rate than the Ukrainian soldiers. But he said, let me down. I don't like to see. It's death. You know, it doesn't affect the United States. We have, other than unless you end up in a world war over this thing, you could. This was a thing that would have never happened had I been president. If I were president, it would have never happened.
So your thoughts about what he said and what this is going to lead to.
Yeah, so it's more than that he let him down. It's he slapped him in the face. I mean, President Trump has done bent over backwards to give Vladimir Putin a chance to end this thing peacefully. And he, at the Alaska summit, President Trump handed Vladimir Putin a letter from his wife asking him to end the war for the sake of the children. And what is Putin's response? In a week later, he bombed a kindergarten in Ukraine. That was an insult to Donald Trump, who personally handed the first lady's letter to him. And he has escalated his bombing dramatically since the Alaska summit. So it's not just that he's disappointed him. He is sticking his finger in Donald Trump's eye, and nobody does that and gets away with it. So I think it's only a matter of time before Donald Trump brings down the hammer on this guy.
How? What do you think?
Well, do to Putin what he did to Iran in the first term and absolutely shut down his oil revenues. You know, we in the first term, Donald Trump succeeded in driving almost all Iranian oil off of the global market. And it brought the Iranian regime to its knees economically. And they were not able to. And what happened was, because they had so little cash, they weren't able to fund their terrorist proxies around the world. There were stories in the New York Times and other places about how Hamas and Hezbollah and all these other people were saying, we don't have any money. We don't have any weapons because the spigot has been turned off. Well, you turn off the spigot to the Russian economy, and guess what? The Russian troops in Ukraine don't have any weapons. They can't afford to buy Iranian drones. They can't afford to pay the North Korean fighters. They can't afford the missiles. So, you know, he can do that. And the other thing is sell Ukraine a lot more weapons. Not with taxpayer dollars. The Ukrainians and the Europeans are willing to pay for it. Take the gloves off them and let them take out the Russian.
How close is he doing to any of those things?
I don't know. I would have thought that he'd have done it by now. But I trust Donald Trump. One thing I respect and admire about Donald Trump is he does what he says, whether you agree with him or not. And sometimes it's stuff I don't agree with, sometimes it's stuff I agree with. But he does what he says. And what he said is that he would do that. So I trust him. I believe he until I'm proven wrong, I believe that it's going to happen. It's just a matter of when, not if.
Mark, you said the best way to remember Charlie Kirk, but I guess this weekend would be everyone's going to be watching. But what are your thoughts? To honor his legacy,
you know, the best way to honor his legacy is to continue doing what he did, which is to go on college campuses and speak and engage the other side of the world. We've seen an outpouring of hate for Charlie Kirk on the left, and that is we can't match their hatred. We have to match his love. And he was a model of engaging the other side respectfully. There are a lot of people on the left who hate us, who want us dead, but not everybody and not the majority. And so our job is to find the people on the other side who want to engage with us and then, quite frankly, crush the people who don't.
Mark Thiessen, thanks so much.
Take care.
Back in a moment.
This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I'm Janice Dean. Join me every Sunday as I focus on stories of hope and people who are truly rays of sunshine in their community and across the world.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com.
Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen, made for your brain.
Some local news today. New York City voted down a plan to build a massive casino in Times Square. Times Square Elmo was like,
"Good, we got to keep this neighborhood classy." Hey, I'm out of my vape juice. Hey, Spider-Man, you got any vape juice?
So that was Jimmy Fallon. I expect that all these guys are going to get together and do something in tribute to Jimmy Kimmel, right? Don't you think they're going to end up going to, he'll going to go to Stephen Colbert's show tonight, or don't you think?
I'm not sure. I mean, it's a good idea.
He's
I'm
livid.
Not sure.
He's not sad. He's livid. He's angry. You see how angry he is in his monologues. I think he's going to do something.
I mean, it would be and Colbert, you know, would probably welcome that too. It would be interesting, though, if the execs at CBS would be cool with that, right?
That's true, too. Yeah, you know, because it's – who owns The Daily Show? Who owns Comedy Central? That's Paramount, isn't it?
Yeah, it's part of CBS.
Yeah, you know what's crazy is Jon Stewart sang an expletive-filled song for Colbert's behalf on his show. Do you remember that? We couldn't have aired it. Because every word was, it was all bleeps.
So you think maybe he'll be over there on Comedy Central more? Could be. So is that your prediction? He's going to show up somewhere tonight?
Oh, yeah. He is definitely not one to knuckle under. But remember, he was fighting on a show every day. So if he comes out and fights and calls Trump horrible names, that's called his show. I mean, that's what he always does. It's not like, where does that come from? No, that's called Monday. I mean, he was doing that every day anyway. Every guest was about that. But I don't know, do you have an obligation in late-night television to balance out your guests? Could it at least be 60-40? You do have a producer out there, 30-70. I saw that Bill O'Reilly came out and said he used to like Jimmy Kimmel, but he seemed to have lost his mind since Trump got elected. If anyone saw those jokes in the prompter, doesn't he have a producer to say, now's not the time?
They weren't jokes. That's the thing. I mean, it just...
Well, let's say the monologue.
Yeah. But I think that's the problem there in that it stopped being funny. It's been more of like a news opinion.
And maybe you can relate to this.
Okay.
The talent becomes so powerful, no one wants to say anything to them. Like, that's not funny. You can't put that in.
Well, that could be one, but I also probably think that bubble is, they probably all think alike, would be my assumption. However, here's my prediction. I think Kimmel shows up on Stern first. You're thinking about it.
Yeah. Because Sirius, who owns Sirius? Sirius owns Sirius.
And then Kimmel and Stern are good friends, and they'd be able to chat it through longer.
Absolutely. I wonder what Howard Stern said today.
That's a good question. We'll find out.
What is today? Thursday doesn't work.
There you go.
He only works Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I think. Or Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. He only works 2 or 3 days a week. Incredible. All right. Here's a little from what Mark Halperin said, just about how the left seems to have lost it when it comes to Trump and seems to have lost the theme when it comes to Kirk. Cut 14.
I'm stunned and shocked by their failure to, and in the clip with President Obama, their failure to understand just how painful this is for people in this country who knew Charlie Kirk. And they continue to not understand him. They don't know what he accomplished. They don't know his heart. They don't know what he's about. And they're continuing to operate on one principle. If Donald Trump feels something, they hate it.
And that's it. And that's all. The way hearing that, that's what I think matters. Like, they don't understand that he's just not famous. You know, he's just not, he's not a political operative. Like, he's like a person, and that he had a personality and people got to know him. And most of those people are young. And a lot of those people, I think, share an audience. They say with Jimmy Kimmel had this young audience. And that was one of the values of it. Also, you know, with the whole math, I can't do the math, but evidently online, his clips would get a lot of clicks. So that's where it would balance out. He also spun out, and I think he's part of a couple of those sitcoms that nobody watches on ABC. You also host one of those game shows, I understand. So it's not like he's out of a job, and you make $17 million for 20 years. I'm pretty sure you're going to be okay monetarily. So there's no reason for him to rush back. At the very least, you'll hear him on a podcast. Quick note, if you want to see me in person, September 27th in Richmond, Virginia, go to briankilmeade.com. November 1st, I'll be in Pottstown, Pennsylvania, History, Liberty, and Laughs. It's a show like no other, and I get a chance to meet you first in the VIP area. So hope to see you in person, especially WRVA listeners who I have a chance to visit. I've visited three times since they were kind enough to carry the show. Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's the Will Cain Show. Watch it live at noon Eastern, Monday through Thursday on FoxNews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss a show. Get the podcast 5 days a week at FoxNewsPodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.